This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
It's a service for cards that are under $20. And what's exciting about this is it'll be like using a stamp, but you'll get tracking. That means two really big things. One, for the buyer, obviously, is they're getting a delivery notification. They're going to know where their card is, and they're going to get all the benefits of tracking. For our sellers, first-class mail can cost up to $3.50 to sell a single card. And when you're selling a $5 card, there's not a lot of profit to be had when you're spending $3.50 to ship it. So this will allow people to save up to 66% on first-class mail, depending on what they're shipping.
There's not going to be as much in the way of sales post-holiday, and that could be to the advantage of eBay sellers. And the reason for that is that if there's less competition out there, that's a good thing for you because you would be able to jump on the consumers that are expecting sales or offers, and they're not finding them.
I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Griff. And this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 121. Hello, Rebecca.
Hey there, Griff. How are you this week?
I'm okay. I'm looking forward to the end of the year. And in fact, as I mentioned last week, this is our last episode for the year 2020.
Goodbye, 2020. We won't miss you. Although
we'll never forget you, but we won't miss you.
That's for sure. Are you doing anything interesting for the holidays?
No, absolutely not. It's too risky. So we'll be staying home and watching episodes of our favorite shows.
I'm actually kind of looking forward to keeping it low key this year. I usually have a huge Christmas party every year. And of course, that's not on. So I'm kind of excited to maybe decorate a little bit less, eat a little bit more food, and just kind of take the day easier than we usually would.
Let me write this down. Remind Rebecca next year to send an invite to her so-called big party.
Absolutely. But I am surprised that it's the end of the year. It did feel like this year was taking forever, and now all of a sudden it's over.
I know. We were just talking before we started the recorder that this is 21 episodes since our 100th, which seems like it was just yesterday.
It does. That was a big milestone, and that was about when I was still fairly new here at eBay. I remember what a big moment that was.
Yeah, you're all broken now.
This is true. I think I've got my feet wet, if you will.
Yes. Well, we look forward to 2021. It could never... No, I'm not going to say that. I was about to say it couldn't be worse than this year, and that is just tempting the fates. So I'm just going to pull that back in. Oh, by the way, it's time for some seller news. What do you have for us this week?
Well, Griff, there's a lot of discussion right now among sellers about the service levels of all of the mail carriers, and sellers are noticing some delays in delivery. We wanted to let everyone know that we're aware of your concerns and we are taking action to reduce your frustrations where we can. And while there is some unpredictability in delivery reliability, most items actually are still arriving on time, our data shows. But to allay the concerns of all sellers, and we acknowledge that there really are some problems out there that sellers are reporting to us, we want everyone to know that we're managing estimated delivery dates, and we are also advising buyers to anticipate potential delays in a few different spots on the site. You can read more about all of that in our recent post on the Seller News Announcement Board at ebay.com/sellernews.
Yeah, and I have to say, Rebecca, I've been buying a lot right now on eBay. And interestingly enough, it's mostly for inventory in the future, in particular, fragrances that I know are about to be discontinued or have been discontinued and are going to rise in value in the next year. And I have to say, all of my purchases so far, and there's been over 20 of them just this month, are arriving on time or even earlier than promised. But of course, now I realize that's just my experience. Now, if you as a seller find that your shipped parcels are being delayed, the best thing you can do is message those buyers and let them know, well, that you're aware of the carrier delays and you're monitoring the tracking and you want to thank them for their patience. Just being aware of it and letting your buyers know that you're aware of it can go a long way to easing buyer concerns.
Yeah, the proactive messaging to buyers is a great point, Griff. I would also add, however, that sellers should be thoughtful before doing a return outside of the process, simply because if you do a voluntary return, you aren't necessarily going to be covered in any future protections or if the item shows up after all.
Right.
It's a little bit of a mixed message because we want you to proactively help your buyers, but there also are systems in place that will protect sellers.
That's very wise advice, Rebecca. Let the processes play out. Don't preemptively send a refund. So you cover yourself as well as your buyer by doing that. So any other news items, Rebecca?
Well, we do have some more exciting news, but I'm going to let somebody else share that with us.
Oh, who would that be?
In fact, it is your first guest.
Oh, oh, you mean eBay category lead for trading cards, Bob Means. Yes, he's here this week with some interesting news.
And then, of course, I'll be back later with our other guest this week, Sucharita Kodali from Forrester.
Rebecca, your first podcast interview. How exciting.
I know, I'm all grown up.
What will you and Sucharita be discussing?
Sucharita's here to share her insights into this year's holiday selling season and then what she sees looking ahead to 2021.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, it's all laid out. Shall we begin?
Yes, let's get to it.
We're taking some time at the end of the year to check in on specific categories. One of those is trading cards. It's been an interesting year for all the categories, including trading cards. And I thought if we're going to take a pulse of what's going on, we should talk to somebody who actually knows. And that would be Bob Means. He's the category lead for trading cards here at eBay. Bob, I believe, might have some news about a new service that I've got wind of, but we'll find out in a moment. Hey, Bob, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Griff. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So what is the status of the trading card category at eBay?
Trading cards at eBay and in general have been really, really explosive this year. It's always been a super strong category for eBay, and eBay has been the marketplace leader in trading cards for years. But this year has really been special for a couple reasons. Really quick, when I'm talking trading cards, you know, everyone thinks about sports cards. That's a big piece of the trading card business. Also in trading cards is what we call collectible card games. Or you'll hear me say it as CCG. That's Magic the Gathering, Pokemon, yes. Yu-Gi-Oh!, all those games that are out there. They're like strategic card games. And then the third category that goes into this is what we call non-sports trading cards. The most famous of those would be the Star Wars trading cards or the Garbage Pail Kids trading cards that are still kicking today.
Yeah.
You know, whenever there's a new movie out or a new hit television series, there's still collectible cards that come out to support those launches. All three of those categories have been incredibly strong for us this year. One of the things that probably impacted us dramatically here is COVID. With a lot of people staying at home, they started looking at their collections and they started to re-engage with them and found that shoebox that's up in the attic and looked through it and found some valuable cards there. Another couple things on the sad note, Kobe Bryant's death really had a big impact on us. A lot of people started looking at Kobe merchandise, and that included sports trading cards. And then the third big piece was the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance. Of course, Michael Jordan went nuts, and a Michael Jordan rookie card is one of the holy grails of sports trading cards.
But I imagine it would be, yes.
But what was crazy is Scottie Pippen would be a key person in one of the episodes, and suddenly we'd see interest in Scottie Pippen skyrocket, or anyone down to John Sally, or every player that got some sort of announcement on the episode would then spike on eBay the next day.
Yeah,
I think what happened is no one forgets Michael Jordan. No one forgets Scottie Pippen, but we forget some of the battles that they had and the people that they played. Isaiah Thomas, as an example, was sort of the arch enemy of Michael Jordan. His card skyrocketed. The other thing that's been happening in sports trading cards specifically is basketball has become the number one sport for sports trading cards. We all probably think about baseball cards, and baseball cards is still incredibly strong. But basketball players have become brands unto themselves. Michael Jordan started it with the shoes and the jerseys and everything. But we see people like Kobe, again, rest his soul, but LeBron, Steph Curry, you know, these players are becoming brands and icons on the basketball floor. And we're seeing that reciprocate in the value of their cards. And a last thing that's been fascinating to watch this year is a new rookie can come along and have an amazing game, and you'll see his cards spike the next day. There's a guy out there who I've enjoyed watching play named Bol Bol because he's got the greatest name in basketball as far as I'm concerned. And he had a game where he put up, I don't remember, 30 points or something, 12 rebounds. It was an amazing game. And all of his cards spiked 100% the next day. It was really fascinating to watch.
These are like talismans of culture that people latch onto, whether it's in sports or even outside of sports, any sort of merchandise. There's been this enormous spike in chess sets ever since the Queen's Gambit has become so popular on Netflix.
Yeah.
So there, that eBay connection with pop culture icons and collectors is as strong as ever. And I was surprised. I would have had no idea that in the sports arena of trading cards, that basketball would be bigger than any other sport. But there it is.
There's a sports card for every sport. We have cricket cards. We have pool yes. cards. We have them all. Soccer, as you can imagine, is probably the highest trajectory sport in America right now. Mm-hmm. Again, much smaller base than anything we do in baseball, football, hockey. But we've watched that skyrocket, and we're seeing that business double year over year kind of thing, where as those players become more well-known in the States, we see people actually importing cards from Europe to sell on eBay, and they're doing great with it because there's a lot of interest in the European leagues, and it'll be fascinating to watch what happens in the next World Cup, for instance, because I think in the last World Cup, there wasn't necessarily this large assortment of player cards. But by the time the next one rolls around, I think all of the manufacturers are going to be in position to take advantage of that. We've even seen some success in women's sports trading cards in soccer. You know, women's soccer in the U.S. is huge, and we see a lot of interest in those cards. The WNBA, Sue Bird just has, you know, set every record you can imagine, and there's interest in her cards. So yeah. It's a very democratic process, and it's an amazing thing to watch the connection between things that are happening from a cultural perspective in any single moment and see that translate into what people are looking for on eBay.
Yeah, and it's the desire not only to have something to connect with, but people are not fools. They know that there's the potential for what they're buying increasing in value. So like you said about rookies, if somebody's new on the scene and they're suddenly making a big splash, it makes sense that people are going to be looking for trading cards for that particular person so that they can get into the action before the price spikes.
You do. You absolutely have the what we call the investor or the flipper, the person who's looking for that card for that player who might take off and be a future Hall of Famer. And so there is kind of an investment aspect to it. Then you've also got the more casual investor who maybe just loves the Warriors. Some of those cards might cost you 50 cents and Steph Curry might cost you $5, but you're not necessarily thinking about the investment quality because it has an emotional connection to you.
Yes.
And then from a gift buying perspective, my kids know who my heroes were when I was a kid. And so there's that nostalgia piece too, where... And
who were your heroes, Bob?
Willie McCovey, the San Francisco Giants. He was my hero growing up, and I'm probably aging or dating myself right now, but it's all right. For me, the Will Clarks of the world and the Kevin Mitchells, all the Giants that I grew up on. And unfortunately, I probably shredded those cards making motorcycle sounds on my bike when I was a kid. But, you know, my kids know that I love that stuff, and they go out and they find it. And a lot of those players, again, Hall of Famers and whatnot, and their cards might be worth a couple bucks. And so yeah. it's a purchase that my kids like to make for me. And it's a very thoughtful gift. So I appreciate it too.
Especially this time of year. So overall, trading card category on eBay is doing okay.
Yeah, well, the other one that's kind of amazing, it's doing great. We were talking about CCG a little bit. And the thing that's been fascinating about CCG, collectible card games, yeah. is with COVID, people aren't playing the games socially like they normally would. Magic the Gathering usually has something called Friday Night Magic, where people go to a local game store, they bring their collection with you, they bring these decks that they've built, and they play against, you know, sometimes random strangers or people that they know who congregate there every Friday night. That's not happening right now. People have figured out how to do it over Twitch and over webcams and Zoom and all that kind of stuff. But the interest hasn't died. People are still buying those cards so that they can build these powerful decks and they can be competitive. And it hasn't even slowed down, even though in, I think, the case of Magic the Gathering Pokemon, there's online versions of the game. But that hasn't stopped people from wanting to have the physical, tangible card in their hands.
No, of course. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about collectible card games is that's very similar to sports cards is you have cards that are 25 years old that are worth thousands of dollars. And you have cards that are still being released and freshly manufactured that are worth nickels of dollars. There's people that need both. So that business has really been strong. The sports card business has been incredibly strong. And non-sports trading cards seems to be like the third place where people are now getting that nostalgia kick and finding the cards that either they remember as kids or they're finding out that there's a brand new collection of Garbage Pail Kids and they get them for their kids and their kids laugh at them too. eBay also has had some wonderful opportunities to have a couple exclusives. We had an exclusive set of Garbage Pail Kids that were all connected to eBay.
When was that?
That was a couple months back.
Oh, I missed it.
I'll see if I can find you a set, Chris.
Please, that would be great.
One of the cards was Sniper Sam, and it was a picture of a Garbage Pail Kid sitting there with his, you know, ready to hit the enter button on an auction.
Oh, yeah.
All these great, like, tied into the eBay culture. It was a lot of fun. And we just recently also did an exclusive for The Mandalorian. Mandalorian's a huge show on Disney Plus, and we just finished doing an exclusive Mandalorian card through Topps that you could only get on eBay. And it was, I think, our best performing card that we've ever sold in the non-sports trading card.
Yeah.
The number of units that we sold was the best single listing we've ever had. So in that category, and that was a lot of fun to see.
So the word of advice here is if you're a seller and you're sourcing anything, keep an eye out for any trading card right now. They're potentially worth reselling. Maybe not always for tens or hundreds of dollars, but you never know what you're going to stumble across. I just saw it in the garage. About 5 years ago at a thrift store, I bought a white binder that's filled with Magic the Gathering cards. And I thought, no, this might be worth something. And I put it aside. I should take that out.
No, you should send that over to me as a holiday gift. There's probably no value in it.
Probably not. I've
got other things to do.
Sound like every antique dealer I used to know. Yeah. Oh, this is not worth anything.
You know what that reminds me of, though, is when I talk to people about this category, so many people had them when they were kids. And so many people have that same story of, I wonder if it's in my attic. I wonder if my mom's still holding on to those. Those kind of stories are always a lot of fun. And I always tell people, yeah, go find them and go look and see if you've got something. You can use eBay as a price guide reference and do the old trick of looking at the sold listings and see if you've got some value there.
Well, that's always very heartening. So thanks for that update. Now, I got to put you on the spot here because I was talking to a colleague on Slack and she happened to mention there's this new service coming up, and she wouldn't share a lot of the details, but she said if you talk to Bob, he may share them for the podcast. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Bob. What is this new service? I have no idea what it is.
Let me go back a step first. The other super interesting thing about sports trading cards is we've sold six-figure trading cards, right? Hundreds of thousands of dollars for some of these super rare collectibles. We sell $1,000 cards. We sell $500 cards. We sell $50 cards. And we sell a lot of cards that are under $20.
Yeah.
I joke sometimes that there's probably not a USPS mail truck driving on the road today that there's not a couple cards from eBay on that truck. Tremendous amount of transactions. And the great thing about under $20 is, like I was saying, there's a lot of great cards out there that might have either that emotional impact, that nostalgia impact for you, or you're a gamer and those are the cards that you're going to build your deck on. And we've been working hard to try to find new ways of supporting our sellers and giving our buyers great experience. It's actually getting formally announced later today at the Sports Card Investor Show. It's a service for cards that are under $20. And what's exciting about this is it'll be like using a stamp, but you'll get tracking. That means two really big things. One, for the buyer, obviously, is they're getting a delivery notification. They're going to know where their card is, and they're going to get all the benefits of tracking. For our sellers, first-class mail can cost up to $3.50 to sell a single card. And when you're selling a $5 card, there's not a lot of profit to be had when you're spending $3.50 to ship it. So this will allow people to save up to 66% on first-class mail, depending on what they're shipping. And it effectively looks like a stamp. It costs about the same as a stamp. And it'll also allow sellers to work towards getting TRP status. Because as you know, to be TRP, you have to ship everything with tracking. And this has been a problem for us. We want the tracking service. But again, $3.50 on a card that weighs an ounce and might cost $5 or be sold for $5, you know, that's rough for someone to run a business on. And even though there's tremendous velocity opportunities out there, we still wanted just to improve that capability for our sellers. And again, give buyers the better experience. I think there's always a bit of a nervousness if you use a stamp. So we have a lot of sellers out there that can't get TRP because they're using stamps because they need the profit margin that comes along.
Oh, yes. I've heard this for years from sellers of ephemera or postcards as well.
Sure. And when you use a stamp, you just don't have quite that same security as when you're using something that provides tracking on both sides of the equation, right? The seller sees what's going on, the buyer sees what's going on, and it's just a better selling and buying experience for everyone.
Well, now, how does this work? Do you print the stamp or do you have to buy the stamps, or can you actually print a stamp label on eBay when you go to ship the card? How will that work?
Yeah, so it's through the eBay label system. You sell a card. It's going to only be for cards.
Oh, that was my next question. We'll go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So because you just said something about stamps and postcards, and we realize there's a lot of things out there that could benefit from this. We understand that there's a lot of lightweight, thin things that could use this service, but we need to learn about it. We need to shake the bugs out of the tree, right? That's the wrong metaphor, but you know what I'm trying to say. We got to work the bugs out of the system. And the amount of velocity we do in trading cards makes it the perfect category to figure out how this is going to work and how well our buyers are going to react to it. But basically, it's through the eBay label system. And so what's happening if you're a seller and you sell something under $20 and it hits a couple other metrics. So I don't want to get too into the weeds.
No, okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be under a quarter inch. So you couldn't send 100 nickel cards.
Of course.
You would get too thick, right?
Yeah.
But you can send 5 $2 cards because that's a $10 purchase and you can use this eBay standard envelope. What's going to happen is you're going to get to the eBay label flow and you're going to see this opportunity because it's a card and it's under $20 and it's under 3 ounces. And what's going to happen is then you're going to need to print out a label from your printer and you're just going to apply that to a regular standard envelope or a hard pack envelope or whatever you want to use and you ship it.
That's super amazing. Easy. This is something to look forward to. And like you said, this is being announced the day we're recording. Is that or is this going to
That's right. It's been announced later today at the Sports Card Investor Show. And then
okay. There's going to be a lot of news about this.
There will be a lot of news about this. And then it's going to be announced today. It's going to be rolled out in January.
Okay. Well, that's coming up. January is next month. So it's something to look forward to. A lot of our sellers are saying, this is great. I can hear them right now. They're in my head saying, this is great. But is there the chance that this would be expanded to other categories in the future?
Absolutely. But again, whenever you do a new service, you have to figure out how it works and how it doesn't work. And there's some complexities around it, Griffin. Again, the main one is if the package is too heavy, it could get returned to the seller. Yeah. If the package is a little too thick, it's got to go through the conveyor systems at the U.S. Postal Service. So, they've got some pretty sophisticated system to make sure that you don't try to send something too large. We had a lot of good conversations about, let's say, a phone case, for an Apple iPhone.
Yeah.
They're pretty lightweight, right? But they're going to always be too thick to use this service. So that would be something that doesn't work. But stamps, coins, postcards, again, anything that's lightweight would potentially be an opportunity for us. It's the same idea. If we can give it to more sellers and we can provide it as a service to more buyers, probably going to be the right thing to do. But we just have to see how it works in trading cards. And if it creates more headaches than we thought, or if buyers have an issue with, I don't know. I personally think it's going to be amazing. I think it's going to be a game changer in the industry. I think it's tremendous for everybody who's selling trading cards and ultimately be tremendous for other categories. But right now we just have to give it a shot in trading cards, run it for, how many months, we don't know. Find the bugs, figure out the system, and then hopefully improve on it.
I think this is very exciting and it's understandable. You want to test this out with a single category. I think it's going to work, though. I got to tell you. Hey, I got to ask you a question, Bob. Were you one of the people that negotiated with USPS on this? Because I know this could not have been an easy thing to get them to agree to.
I wasn't. I was sort of behind the scenes cheering our guys on while they did it. I think there's a very interesting side component of this. And this is one of those things that we're not openly sharing. So I don't know if I should be putting it on a podcast.
Well, no, don't put yourself in jeopardy, but give us what you can.
The U.S. Postal Service has something called informed delivery. And I don't know if you use it, but you can sign up through your email account to get informed delivery from the U.S. Postal Service. And what's interesting about this is if you use informed delivery, you'll get an extra notification that your card's getting there. You'll actually get a little scan of the card.
Oh, yes. I've heard of this. I've never used it, but I think I have a friend who uses it. I think he uses it through his iPhone.
Right. So it's not necessarily part of the service that we're advertising, but it's out there. Yeah. And I know the U.S. Postal Service, the upside to them is that more people start using their informed delivery and they would love to use that.
Sure,
that was part of the negotiation process. And it's going to be a part of the system and people are going to see it if they have informed delivery. So it's going to be out there in the wilds. So I think it's okay to talk about it. It's not necessarily something that we are expressively telling anyone about.
Yeah, I understand, of course. Does this service have a name?
Right now, it's sort of tenderly called eBay Standard Envelope for Trading Cards.
Ah, okay. ESET, I like it.
Yeah. It's we love to have easy acronyms and that's not necessarily the easiest one. But so right now we're calling it eBay Standard Envelope for Trading Cards, and which leads to eventually maybe it's eBay Standard Envelope for Stamps, eBay Standard Envelope for Stationery, whatever the other sources are or the other categories are that we eventually move into. But it helps us make it easily scalable.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you. This is great news. Great to hear about the trading card category doing so well. I'm going to check out in my garage and see if I still have that white binder. It was there yesterday. I hope it's still there today. And thanks for this new news about this new service. This is really great news. We'll all be following it. And if you ever have any updates, we'd love for you to come back on the podcast and talk about it.
I would love to come back to the podcast to talk about anything, Griff. This is always is always fun.
Yeah, you seem like you have a lot of passion. You'd be a good guest on a regular basis.
We feel our sellers and our buyers' passion. But when you work for eBay and you get to work for a category like trading cards and you get to interface with our customers and you just see how much they love this stuff, it fills you with that energy to try to find better solves for them. And so, I think this is going to be a success. I think this is going to be very well received. I think it's going to be a great tool for our sellers. I think it's going to be a great experience for our buyers. And I think it's going to really help eBay further themselves in this category as the major place to buy and sell all trading cards on eBay, regardless of the price point.
Well, Bob, thanks so much for taking time out of your day. We always appreciate it when one of our colleagues can come on the podcast.
Absolutely, Griff. Thank you very much.
Bob Means is the category lead for trading cards at eBay. We've been talking about the trading card category health, and we also found out about a new service. I'll put a link to the trading card category in our transcript, and if we have one, I'll put a link to the news about the new service, eBay Standard Envelope for Trading Cards.
Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester, Sucharita Kodali is a leading expert on e-commerce, multi-channel retail, consumer behavior, and trends in the online shopping space. In her research, Sucharita covers such consumer-oriented topics as e-commerce forecasting and trends, merchandising best practices, conversion optimization, and social computing in the retail world. Sucharita joins us now to share her insights about this holiday retail shopping season. Welcome, Sucharita.
Thanks for having me, Rebecca. It's great to be here.
We're really thrilled to have you, and we're excited that we can bring you and your insights and the information that you have to sellers to help them anticipate what's happened this year and what's up next for 2021. I have to admit that I definitely shopped early this year and pretty much bought everything online.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that. I think that a lot of retailers and merchants may have hoped that October would have been stronger. Unfortunately, many shoppers were still holding off and they continued to hold off. And in spite of even all of the shipping delays, all of the media reports about the challenges with shipping, I think that consumers are still a little behind relative to where we would expect them to be at this point in the holiday shopping cycle.
Interesting. So we know that e-commerce was essential throughout the pandemic, and retailers, small businesses had to quickly adapt. Can you tell us some of the top trends you've seen in the evolution of e-commerce and online retail experiences this year? And I think we're also really interested in what product lines shoppers are buying online. Things that normally people would have gone to brick and mortar retailers, but they're now buying online.
One of the biggest things that we've, of course, seen is that shift to digital. And in particular, I mean, eBay's been really great about being ahead of that curve and enabling a lot of the small local merchants with up and coming and a lot of the programs that have really been about supporting those local businesses, because those companies have been the hardest hit and need to pivot the hardest and the fastest. Some of that, of course, is digital. Some of it is just enabling things like curbside pickup wherever possible. Digital payments, if you happen to have that physical infrastructure, those are important. And that's been a big change and a big shift. And I think that that's reflected in some of that Cyber 5 data that we saw earlier, is that the marketplaces have gained disproportionately. I think part of that has been because the consumer expects choice and they do expect the selection when they can't find it elsewhere. That's what's top of mind. It's been top of mind for a while, and it's certainly top of mind during the pandemic as well. As far as categories are concerned, electronics and some of those categories about keeping families busy. The other categories that I would say that we're seeing, certainly anything that supports warmth. Fleece is doing very well right now. We're seeing socks and PJs and anything that is about comfort, like blankets, those seem to be doing well. Anything that's outdoor, do-it-yourself home. We're still seeing things like heat lamps and fire pits being sold out. And we still see huge uptake on anything that's workout related. So exercise related, you know, leggings, at home exercise equipment. So from a subcategory standpoint, those are some of the small trends too.
Interesting. I know I bought a tabletop patio heater this year myself.
Good for you. Hopefully you got it ahead of the sellouts.
I did. Never mind the toilet paper. Bring us heaters, right?
Right.
So this year, there has been really noticeable change in shopper behavior. Let's talk about some of those behavioral changes, you know, like mobile payments or shopping, or are people at home with their desktops and shopping more on desktop? Maybe they're on their phones. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, we see a tremendous amount of multi-device usage within households. So what that means is, you know, you will have, like, you know, the people who are on their Zoom calls, like shopping on the side, you know, but they're not shopping necessarily on the desktop. It's, you know, on an iPad, or I mean, it's on a phone on the side. So there's definitely a lot of pre-shopping, a lot of inventory checking, or a lot of investigating who they're going to, you know, kind of consider in the course of that transaction. That's definitely a big part of that experience now. So you just want to be conscious as a seller of things like, you know, making sure that the imagery that you portray is going to be reflected well on different device sizes. And we are seeing a lot of video, customer service calls too. So just responding quickly to questions that consumers may have, that's an expectation of customers. We've seen video certainly provide greater boost to conversion whenever we see that offered. It's essentially an extension of imagery. So, and we know that the more images you share, the more likely that there is to be a sale ultimately.
That's a great reminder. And it certainly reflects what we see here at eBay as well. For holiday, for many people, it's actually about those post-holiday sales that they get excited about. And whether you're a buyer or a seller, that last week of the year can be a big deal. Can you tell us what to anticipate this year with those post-holiday sales and what to look forward to?
I think the pandemic essentially forced a lot of companies to cut their orders pretty early, and they didn't go back and revisit a lot of those cancellations. And what you had as a result is even through Thanksgiving weekend, you had less compelling offers, like merchant to merchant, than you did in the past. It was completely common in the past that you would, on a Cyber Monday, have 40% off of everything on a website plus free shipping. And that was far less common this year. It was more likely that you would have 30% off of select items with a shipping threshold. Just the richness of those offers was substantially less than in years past. And part of the reason for that is that there just wasn't as much inventory that retailers had to discount. And they're trying to make that inventory that they have last as long as possible. What that potentially means is that there's not going to be as much in the way of sales post-holiday. And that could be to the advantage of eBay sellers. And the reason for that is that if there's less competition out there, that's a good thing for you, because you would be able to jump on the consumers that are expecting sales or offers and they're not finding them. You want to be able to take advantage of that if possible. I mean, people will buy after Christmas if there are sales. It's entirely promotionally driven. Like, that's sort of the big driver of that between Christmas and New Year's rush, whether it's e-commerce or in stores. It's, you know, what's on sale? What can I get that didn't kind of get sold already that I may be able to take advantage of? And if there isn't going to be much of that, and we don't expect as much this year, if you have anything excess, you know, take advantage of that time frame, promote it, you know, and really kind of jump on anything that you can get your hands on.
Right. It's a good time to move some of that inventory that's been hanging around for a lot of the year.
Yeah.
So I hear that online shopping and COVID shopping habits are likely to continue post-pandemic and throughout the year. What are those predictions you're looking for in the year to come?
The single biggest change, I think, is just the amount of internet research that has been happening. And certainly the pandemic has accelerated in every product category. And where that makes a difference for sellers is that your ability to show up and be present when consumers are in that search process, because if their first touch point is digital, you know, and in the past, maybe their first touch point was Walmart stores, it just gives you more of an opportunity to be apparent in the course of that shopping funnel for all kinds of different categories that you may not have been considered for in the past. So that's definitely just something that's a subtle change, but it's an important one, because it gives small merchants so much more opportunity than what they had in the past. We also expect to see more distributed commerce. It's been a term that's been around for a long time. But the idea of, you know, kind of completing transactions on social networks, or completing transactions off a merchant site, or enabling things like shoppable video that will be ways for a merchant to connect directly to their audience. Like, these are all things that we expect to continue to see. They have a tremendous amount of potential. I think a lot of the playbook in the US is still being shaped and formed, but we've known for decades that businesses like QVC and HSN are incredibly powerful and incredibly lucrative, and they resonate with so many people. Their issues have always been that, you know, it's a medium which is highly dependent on, you know, kind of television adjacencies and how low the channel number was and what they were next to. So people would just happen to stumble upon it, their network, and stop and watch it. And what's different and really powerful about shoppable video is there's a live component, which takes elements of that, of the QVC experience, but there's also the ability to have an on-demand experience too. And that expands the universe of who can be exposed to and who can be, you know, I guess, seduced by kind of great selling. So that's really some of the big change that we expect through 2021, especially if there is less of an opportunity to sell in the physical store. There's not the ability to touch and feel merchandise in a physical environment. If we have more lockdowns in the coming months, hopefully we won't, because we'll be able to get vaccines. But if things even get harder in the next few months, something to offset that can be more video selling.
Interesting. I'm sure the sellers out there listening to the podcast that their minds are turning now. We already touched on promotions, but let's talk about it more. What are discounts and marketing and promotions going to mean post-holiday?
The good thing about promotions is that they never lose their appeal. If you're able to offer something as a promotional discount, the consumer will always respond to that in some way, shape, or form. The challenge for sellers is, how do you sell without giving away too much of your margin? And that's particularly problematic if you're selling a commoditized good or one where it's broadly available online. That's always an issue. And typically the biggest promotions are going to be often in the most broadly available goods. The things that we recommend are authenticity guarantees or any type of post-transaction service levels that sellers are able to provide, you know, whether it's, you know, support with setup or kind of some sort of a guarantee, anything to layer on value to the customer beyond just discounting that good. And that is something that we are seeing a lot of brand manufacturers in particular leaning into when they don't want to engage in a lot of heavy discounting or high-low pricing. They'll offer some type of servicing on the back end, or they have a special 1-800 number for their buyers, or they may have certain content, you know, depending on the product category, that could be relevant to that user. Even, you know, kind of engaging in events or other type of special meetups that they may do with other users just to get people excited about a product. And the good thing about events these days is that they can all be done virtually and relatively inexpensively. Those are all things that we've seen as ways to engage customers, to drive conversion, but without having to give away, you know, as much of your margin as we've seen in the past.
Okay. So I have a question that a seller sent to me, and she would like to know, what do buyers want right now? Do they want better answers, faster answers? Or is it more that they're looking for a personal touch, like notes and cards in the packages?
It definitely can be very helpful to have an extra personal touch. If you have the time and the resources and it doesn't take away too much from your margin, absolutely, highly, highly encourage doing anything that is high perceived value with a low marginal cost. Absolutely. But what you just described, Rebecca, were two different types of customer service. One is like the unboxing customer service experience, and the other is the post-transaction. If there is an issue with the product or some expectation around the product, you know, kind of that level of customer service. And you almost have to address them slightly separately. The unboxing experience, I mean, anything you can do to make things look better. I mean, to just make that unboxing experience look as good as like if I were buying something from a luxury store or Lululemon or somewhere else. So if you can, and if you have the ability and the interest in doing that, there is usually no downside because it will usually help that seller score. Now, if there's an issue after the fact, and what are people expecting from a customer service? Like if something goes awry, if you don't want to give a complete refund, listening to the customer and acknowledging them, you know, in many cases, what we will see is that people just want to be heard and they want to recognize that you're going to go try to fix it for the future. You know, in many cases, these are also people who want their money back too. And in those cases, there's really probably that's the only thing you can do to completely appease them. But short of that, it is a bit of an investment in time to make them feel heard. And, you know, you can do that via email, but in many cases, when there are the complaints, it's a phone call, which is expected.
That personal touch, whether you're talking about the unboxing experience or following up with a buyer, it's so important. What is a shopper's number one consideration when they're buying online? What's really that motivating factor?
Well, unfortunately, the number one thing, which we hear over and over again, is the fully loaded price of that item. So if you're selling something that's broadly available and that's generally considered to be a commodity, you do have to be looking at what the comparable offer is elsewhere on the internet. And the offer is the price of the item. It could be the particular SKU that you're selling. What is the shipping cost? And how do you balance that with the shipping time as well? That always shows up on consumer surveys. Is number one. Number two is free shipping. And consumers typically do want free shipping over fast shipping if they're given the choice between the two. The nuance here in this pandemic age, in this Q4 age where there are so many late shipments, is to still be transparent where possible. And I know that the eBay team is working very hard to give that visibility to consumers, but you want to, you know, make sure that you haven't set up false expectations for customers on when they can expect a package to arrive and to manage to that as best as you can. And if there are going to be delays, that you make it transparent where a package is and how much longer it's going to be. And the more that you're able to share that up front, the better. And then the third thing that we see is actually frictionless returns. That's one of the single biggest reasons that people who do not purchase online or who hesitate purchasing online, that's the reason they don't, is because they don't want to have to deal with the hassle of returns. And some of that could be the fear that a merchant may give them a hard time about it. Some of it could be that, you know, the product information was not accurate or there wasn't enough product information online. So that's something that you can constantly be auditing your product descriptions to make sure that all of the information that you're presenting, A, you have enough of it, and B, that it's actually accurate, especially if it is like a color or a fabric. Those are things that tend to be subject to a lot of issues on the recipient side because, you know, maybe a color swatch wasn't as it was portrayed on a particular browser, or you didn't completely accurately represent something. So those are probably some of the easier things to fix if you need to.
And that reinforces what you said earlier about having more pictures and more information. It's really vital in your listings.
Yeah.
And finally, let's talk about some of your key takeaways and some of those predictions for the future.
Yeah. The first thing from a product and assortment standpoint is just at a high level, you know, people continue to shelter at home right now. They're still continuing to work from home. We expect this work from home phenomenon to continue through probably summer of next year, at least, and possibly even longer than that. A number of companies have already announced that they're not even planning on bringing people back. So what that means is that those categories, the same categories that you've been seeing strength in through much of 2020, those should likely experience gains through 2021 as well. But at the first sign that you may start seeing softness or shifts, just be hyper alert and hyper aware, because you don't want to be leaning too heavily into things like office equipment if, you know, people are then headed back to the office later on. From a fulfillment standpoint, late deliveries are going to be the norm through much of Q4 and probably even into some of Q1. And any information that you're able to provide proactively, particularly with respect to when packages are going to arrive or how long it's going to take, the more power to you for doing that. And if you can present as much of that early in the transaction process as possible, the better, because then A, that sets the consumer's expectation, but B, it probably also reduces a contact to you later on. And then from a marketing standpoint, there's a lot of browsing, of course, that is happening on eBay outside of your product categories. And that's where potentially things like sponsored ads could be useful. Videos on social networks, including attracting, you know, people if you have a relatively strong or growing social network presence, really to be pushing information and content through those channels. We've seen retailers have their own podcasts on content. If they're in the beauty space, you know, beauty specific podcast, if they are in the home space, you know, home decor content, only because they're relatively easy to do, they're turnkey, and they can be fun to put together, although, you know, somewhat time consuming. But these are just ideas for marketing.
Well, you know, we're a fan of podcasts here. Anyway, it's really encouraging to hear you reinforce a lot of the things that we advise sellers to do already. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I think I speak on behalf of all of our listeners to say that these are the kinds of insights and predictions that really help as they grow and run their business. Sucharita, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Rebecca.
And now it's time for You Have Questions?
We have answers.
We don't sound so sure, do we, Griff?
Sorry. We have answers. How's that?
That's better. Thank you. So what do you have for us this week, Griff?
Well, we had one call into our voice line at 888-723-4630, but it isn't a question so much as a suggestion. Let's listen.
Hey, guys. How are we doing? My name is Kevin. I use the eBay name Steel City Exchange. I am a big fan of numbers and metrics and data. With the seller metrics that are available through the Seller Hub, it does give you some, but it's kind of limited in the fact that, like, it's not across each category. So I know personally that I'm doing better with video games right now, but I would like to know what that is compared to what I was in a different category, say action figures, comic books, anything like that. Is there a way that we could possibly separate those? And is there a way to get more data? Also, thank you, as always, for the weekly updates, and I hope you guys have a good holiday.
Thanks, Kevin. It's an interesting request. Rebecca, what do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Kevin, for calling that one in, and we will definitely send it on to Harry and his team for their consideration. And if anyone else out there has a question or suggestion for us here at the eBay for Business podcast, why not call it in also at 888-723-4630.
In case you missed it, 888-723-4630. Call that hotline any time of the day, any day of the week. Leave a question or a comment, and who knows, we might just put it on the air.
And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
Well, we're almost finished the last episode of the year, but first, don't forget your daily podcast to-do list.
First, always, always check that seller news announcement board for up-to-date seller news. Do it every morning. Do it every night. Stay up-to-date and fully informed.
Yeah, and I have an odd one this week. I noticed this as a buyer. I get lots of packages with taped-on labels, and they're from sellers who have lots of inventory. If you sell regularly, I urge you to, and this is your second tip, the podcast list, purchase a thermal printer. I guarantee it will change your life.
Literally change their lives?
Yes, change your life. Absolutely.
If you say so. I mean, it's just a printer?
And a thermal printer will indeed make your selling life so much easier. So yes, it's a life changer, and you can find really good deals on eBay.
All right, we will take your word on that one, Griff. If anyone else out there decides to buy a thermal printer and is happy about it, give us a call. Let us know.
Yeah.
And finally, always check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links that we referenced during the episode. We'd like to thank again our guests this week, Category Lead for Trading Cards, Bob Means, and Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester, Sucharita Kodali.
This is our last podcast episode for 2020. We'll be back on January 5th, 2021, with a brand new episode to start off the new selling year on eBay.
And we want to thank everyone for making us a part of your eBay Selling Day this year. We look forward to bringing you more great guests and discussions in 21, and we wish you and yours the happiest and safest of holidays.
Indeed. Happy holidays to everyone. We'll see you in the new and, we hope, better new year. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.